Hi, and welcome to another episode of Solopreneur Spotlight. Today, we are interviewing Peter Holditch, Managing Director of Zigzag Systems Limited, which is a cloud-based management system, and he also recently opened a furniture store in Bingham. We were lucky enough to sit down with Peter and discuss the trials and tribulations of building his own software company from the ground up. And when I say from the ground up, I mean he actually taught himself to build the software from scratch with his own two hands. So he had some invaluable information on the world of software development and also how hard it was going from software to furniture with his latest business. So over to Peter.
Hi, I'm Peter Holditch. I'm the Managing Director of Zigzag Systems Limited, which is a cloud-based management system, which really sort of sits as the heartbeat of a company. So it handles order, stock control, product databases, customer databases, any company that has stock. So retailers, wholesalers, manufacturers get the benefit out of that. And then we link into accounts packages and e-commerce websites and things like that. As a byproduct of that, being traditionally in the furniture trade, we opened this furniture store 10 months ago in the market town of Bingham. And alongside that, a few other business ideas that sort of tend to sit up here.
How did you start your first business?
I was a director of a furniture importers, and I was doing plenty of travelling, going to the Far East, Poland. I looked after sales areas of Ireland and Scotland, so plenty of travelling. And part of my remit was the operations of the particular business that I was involved in. That was the administration side, the system side, and being able to make sure that we could pass information across. With myself and my colleague, quite often being out of the country, we needed something that we could get live information, and that was the way that the internet helped us. So I started building this cloud-based system whilst I was employed as operations director, and that developed and developed, and I enjoyed doing that, and I saw that there was an opportunity within the furniture trade to roll that out, and 4 years ago we set up Zigzag Systems.
What stage is your business at now?
Well, Zigzag is on its second release. So we have a number of retailers and wholesalers that use the two versions. We use, obviously, it in the shop on a day-to-day basis. So it's always constantly being developed whilst we're using it. But that's just organically growing at the moment. Since we've opened the store, focus and attention has perhaps been on this quite a bit. And we're looking to go through a second phase by sort of bringing people in who are able to do some direct marketing, telesales in the sectors that we're looking to grow that. We will have a third version coming out at some point next year, which by taking on criticism, good, bad, or indifferent from our current users to make the experience better. And as I say as well, because we're using it on a day-to-day basis, we've found areas that we can make our life easier. And if it's making our life easier, then it should be making other people's life easier with it as well. So Zigzag being the main sort of thrust of the business.
What are your plans for the future of your business?
Really, as I say, it's just organically growing, and we're bringing people in every week, really. And my networking that I do has been a great help to that. Somebody rang me just this morning that we did a demonstration for, and they're ready and raring to go. And moving it a bit out of the furniture trade, which is my key aim to do, because we're making ourselves a little bit too niche when anybody that carries stock needs good stock control, needs good customer interaction with the systems. So that's really where we see our growth going to be. The customer this morning is somebody who sells wholesales key blanks to the handy centres and key cutting companies around the country. They have a million different key blanks in stock, so our system will be ideal for them. So that's my area of growth. My hope in 5 years' time is that we have probably 25 to 30 users, And because it's a subscription-based system, they pay really a minimum of £99 a month, going up to £300, £400, £500, depending on the number of users, which will then make a very nice little business, a very nice little pension plan, and then just generally growing from there. But we do still need to make sure that we're using the latest technology, we're linking into the latest systems that other people will be using, and integration is key, and using the power of the internet.
What obstacles have you come up against in your business?
Obstacles, first of all, technology. It was something that I pretty much self-taught myself to do. I have several passions in my life. One of my passions, obviously, is furniture. But one of my other passions is programming and overcoming obstacles that you may come across. And Google's a great tool. If you don't know something, you type it in. Generally, somebody does know about it. So that was probably the main obstacle, is actually in the early days, is just learning and making sure that the speed was there, and it was linking in and doing the right things at the right time. Other obstacles as well, people that use Sage that they think does absolutely everything for them, that pretty much does nothing for them. Why would we change from Sage? Well, come and take a look. Oh, no, we don't want to do that. Well, it's going to be cheaper and it will do more for you. And really, it's just trying to explain to people. And generally, if we sit down in front of somebody and give them a demonstration of the system, then they actually realise that it's going to be beneficial and worthwhile to them. But the obstacle with really any business where you are business to business is actually finding the person to speak to. And then once you've found the person to speak to, get enough interest that you're able to sit in front of them and show you your product.
What skills have you learned while setting up your business?
Well, first of all, my programming skills and coding skills have increased dramatically. And by sort of technological uncertainties, actually sort of trying to break those barriers and make sure that our product is the best on the market, that when we are up against other people, that we are going to be the best for the value for money as well. Other skills that I've learned, I mean, certainly my own personal skills have improved greatly by actually going out there and being the decision maker, plus the person that's built it from the ground up as well. And that really does instill a lot of confidence. And I think my own personal confidence has increased greatly. And my networking skills as well. When you are sitting there with other business owners, it's been invaluable, really.
What advice would you give to someone starting a new business?
First of all, is passion. You have to have passion for what you're going to do. If you don't, it becomes a job, it becomes mundane, and then you think, oh, I want to go and do something else now. Secondly, is you've got to have belief in yourself that you're going to be able to do it, because one week in, you come up against an obstacle, you think, oh, that's not worth it. You've got to have belief in yourself that you're going to be able to overcome these things, and you know that your product is good. And I have my own saying. Obviously, I had to invest quite a bit of money into this and time. And my own saying is, if something feels right, then it probably is. And if I'm thinking, right, okay, I'm going to invest in this sofa set and things like that for the shop, and it's another £2,000 of cash flow that you have to find from somewhere to be able to do it. And you look at it and you think, well, that's probably going to be right. That feels right. It feels right. It's got the right sort of look. The people of this particular area will be looking to buy it. Then we buy it. So on a much grander scale, it felt right for me to have this as part of my portfolio, the furniture store. It felt right. It was a lot of money. It's been a lot of time invested. And it's starting to show that it was the right thing to do.
Why did you decide to invest your own money into your business?
Again, it's belief. It's belief that you're doing the right thing. My life took a bit of a change a year or so ago, my own personal life. And it was one of those now and never things, I suppose. You could sit in a job and earn a nice salary and drive a nice car, but there was probably ceilings that was going to go to. Whereas certain freedoms in my own personal life became that I was the sole decision maker, effectively, and it was my money and I could do what I want with it without having to ask anybody else. So yes, I'm not saying it was all my own money. There is other money, and NatWest Bank are very kind, and a few other bits and bobs, and family have helped as well. But I take the sole responsibility. I'm the main guarantor, and it is a bit of a gamble. It's a bit of a punt, but it was one I felt was worthwhile doing.
What advice would you give to someone wanting to become a solopreneur?
Do it, certainly. I wouldn't say don't do it, because that would be wrong, because being in control of your own destiny, being your own boss, it gives you a certain amount of flexibility. You have to be prepared to work hard. You do have to be prepared to work hard. It's not a case of saying, right, okay, I was working 40 hours, I want to work 20 hours, I want to earn twice the amount of money. That's only going to happen if you work hard, or if you have an incredibly good idea. But be prepared to work hard. And if it's 70 hours, if it's 80 hours a week, that's what you need to do to get the job done. If you need to travel, you travel. If you don't need to travel, but you need to pick the phone up and make phone calls, do it.
What advice would you give to someone just starting out as a solopreneur?
Well, the one thing that's been important to me is you talk to people. I consider certainly my initial customers on Zigzag and people that I take on board now, I consider them to be my work colleagues, because it is a lonely place to be when you've got nobody around you, especially if you've been used to being in an office or being in a sales environment where you've got that daily contact with everybody. And make sure that you give the best service. Make sure that you remain professional but friendly. And you will find that the people that you start dealing with will open up a lot more to you. And I consider some of these people are now effectively my colleagues, because they are enhancing my business, enhancing my bank balance as well. But I think that's vitally important. And I touched on it slightly earlier, networking. In whatever form that you can do networking, I think it's vital, because you're working with other like-minded people, and taking their knowledge, taking their advice, and you may find that you have some mutual business that you can do together. I certainly have used networking for my own benefit. I've sold furniture through networking. My phone system, my marketing has all come through networking contacts.
What do you think are the main skills required to be a solopreneur?
There's certain skills or certain traits that you have to have. You need to be self-motivated, certainly, because otherwise you're not going to get out of bed. And when you were working from home or starting a business, and you've had to be up at whatever time to get into the office for 9 o'clock, it's so easy to think, well, I can have another 2 hours in bed because I don't need to commute. I'm working downstairs and I can start at 10, but I'll feed the cat first and do this, that and the other. So self-motivation, get out of bed, get on with it. 7 o'clock in the morning, whatever time suits. If you're speaking to customers and those customers are generally around in the evenings, work in the evenings, and you have to work when your customers need you. Communication skills are vital. You need to be able to talk to these people, understand, have a certain amount of empathy with them. If they're using your products or wanting to use your services, you have to be there. You have to be able to communicate. If you're going to ring somebody back, ring them back. If you've got an email and they need an answer to it, answer it. I think it's vitally important that if you do get an email, and even just to acknowledge the email and say it's going to be 3 days, 4 days before I can get back to you, because otherwise they might go somewhere else. But if you say, yeah, it's going to take me a little while, but I will get back to you, then that's important. Well, as I say, you have to have a passion for what you're going to be doing, whether that's a skill. I think it's something that is vital. You have to be able to talk passionately about it, because if you don't and you're talking to somebody, they will see it. It's like, oh, it's another mundane job. So that's important. Listening is a huge skill, and I've come across a lot of salespeople in my time that don't have that skill. They talk, and they don't actually know what the customer really wants. And sometimes they fall lucky because they happen to have the product that they want. But listen, take information on, and then you're able to come back to that customer or that particular situation with all the information that you've already taken, so you can make sure your presentation or your conversation is then has been sort of filtered around that initial talk that you've listened to. Again, it's a more of a personal trait, but you have to be a nice person. You can't go in there thinking I'm God's gift, I'm going to take over the world, because if you do, you'll come against somebody else who's got the same opinion, and you're going to have problems. The other thing is, don't take it personally as well. It happens. Somebody might love your product, and then you rig them back, and you find out that they've bought it off your rivals. It's not personal. You would hope that when they've bought the other product, it's not good enough, and they'll come back to you. So there's no point burning your bridges. And it is important to be yourself, be a nice person, be trustworthy, because again, that's something that disappears a lot within corporate businesses. There's no trust. But when you're a solopreneur and you are relying on, whether it's somebody that might be spending £100 with you every 10 years or somebody who's spending £10,000 with you every month, you need to make sure you look after them. Because the person that's spending £100 every 10 years might actually tell somebody else that you're brilliant, and they come in and spend £20,000 a month with you. The person spending £10,000 a month with you, you might over concentrate on them, and then when they disappear off, you've got to make sure that you have the other things that are around you. So that's vitally important. Whether somebody comes in and they're wearing scruffy clothes, you don't know. They may have been renovating their 40 bedroom mansion, and that's why they're in scruffy clothes. Or somebody might come in and they're in the smartest, sharpest suit that you've ever seen. They might be wearing it because a friend's given it to them, because they're trying to find a job. So anybody who comes in, don't take it at face value. And this is where listening is important. Ask the questions, listen, take on board what they're saying, and then develop your conversation with them accordingly.
Does starting up a new business distract you from your current business?
I make sure that I've got a business running properly before I sort of flit off and do something else. My master plan in 10 years' time, when I'm still below the retirement age, believe it or not, is to not have to work. So Zigzag has developed, it's got customers, it's working, people are using that. The opportunity came up 10 months, well, it was about a year ago now, that we did this furniture store. At the moment now, we're getting to the point where that is working. We're starting to see that we're starting to hit our break-evens quite regularly, which is important, so we're not piling much more money into it. So if you are going to be a solopreneur with many items in the portfolio, make sure each individual piece is working first, and then go off and do something else. And make sure the people that are around you are, first of all, passionate about it, but secondly, reliable, trustworthy, and able to join you in your roller coaster of being a solopreneur.
Which marketing methods do you use to promote your businesses?
For Zigzag, because it has been furniture trade orientated, it's grown organically, and it's people I've known who've then told other people, and this, that, and the other. And I did a bit of advertising to start with, but yeah, it's word of mouth really has got that to a point where it can run itself. I mean, I could go off on holiday for 2 months and Zigzag would still be bringing the same amount of money in. After a while, if you're not contacting, then that can die off. and it's not really going to grow from there, because when you've got a new client, you need to make sure it's going right. I'm off to just outside Belfast next week for 2 days with a new client and doing the training and everything else. For the store, We do a lot of social media. Facebook is huge for that, and it's very cost effective as well. And also as well, you can put yourself right in front on any device, specifically mobiles, tablets, straight away. So we can say to Facebook, this is what we want, this is the area that we're going to. We are going to target generally females between the age of 30 and 70, people who show an interest in interiors. So we can send an advert to them via their Facebook post for somebody who looks at Good Homes magazine, or somebody who follows a particular interiors company, or somebody else who follows Furniture Village. Facebook knows that they have an interest in interiors, and we can then put our advert there. We're in a small market town in Nottinghamshire, but we can act and be as big as some of the people on the retail parks, and it is incredibly cost effective. We also use local media, so smaller publications, but again being able to target specific areas, because with greatest will, we're not going to get people from central London coming to see us, we're not going to get people from Scotland coming to see us, so we need to concentrate on our local area. Whereas with Zigzag, we have customers in every country of the UK, so if and when we do advertising for that, we will use national publications, but with us being quite niche at the moment in the furniture trade, that's quite easy. But I think when we look for the next phase of growth within Zigzag, we'll be using some more direct marketing, targeting particular industries, and trying to find the right sort of people that will be using that.
How do you plan to compete with big competitors when you grow your business?
We've sort of identified the ideal company that we want to be dealing with. And with our ERP system, there are things like SAP, Microsoft Dynamics, the big boys. But you're talking hundreds of thousands of pounds for some of those particular systems. And yes, they will do absolutely everything you want it to do, and so much more. In my experience of ERPs or other sort of management systems, you tend to use probably about 20% of it. And I said about Sage earlier. Sage is actually quite a powerful tool if you're an accountant. So a lot of people are using it for its very poor stock control and order processing. So people are actually only using a very, very small amount of the package that they're actually paying for. My aim with Zigzag is certainly with the niche that we created, majority of my customers were using about 80% of the power of the system. So you're getting a lot more benefit out of it for the amount of money that you're spending. We really are only targeting SMEs. We're not really looking to put it into the NHS or anything, any of the big boys, purely for the fact that with that, you need to make sure you've got the infrastructure, the support and everything else. And it's something that I would rather keep to smaller user numbers, perhaps 25 to 40 users would be nice. A lot of our clients, we've got some clients that have 2-3 users. But you can then keep control, you can keep an eye on it with having to use web servers and things like that. The more people that you get, the bigger your web servers, the more infrastructure that way that you have, and we're just trying to keep a control over that at the moment. So the big boys, they have their sector of the market. I'm looking to move into a sector of a market that's below that, but people who want to have some of the power that the big boys are able to offer you, but in a lot more cost-effective package.
Has networking been important to your business?
Networking's been vitally important, and having that interaction with other people, other like-minded business owners who have a passion for their own particular sector. Every Tuesday morning, it's vitally important for me to make sure I do my networking, and it's blocked out in my calendar, so I make sure that nobody else takes that time, because I've gained business out of it. I've used services from my networking. And again, for personal development, I think it's vital, and it gives you a chance in a forum. Nobody's there particularly with an ulterior motive. We all want to increase and enhance our businesses. And socially as well, I think it's been good. You are interacting with other like-minded people, so they have very similar interests to you quite often. I've sat there for 15, 20 minutes after I actually got my will done by somebody through networking. And when he rang me, he says, "Oh, I didn't realise you liked cricket," because he'd seen my Facebook profile with the cricket on it. So we had a meeting talking about cricket. So it's not always about business, and it's finding out what people do and using that as a social tool, but also you could use it for your benefit as well. The networking that I do through Four Networking is their motto is 50% business, 50% social. It really is. I'm a group leader of Nottingham Breakfast, so I'm effectively the chair of the meeting, and it's done in a restaurant. Everybody's eating their eggs and bacon. I stand up and try and keep it on time, introduce people that may have been new, or just sort of give people the lowdown. And it's always light-hearted humour, people that are now my friends sitting there heckling and all sorts of things, and it is good, and it's fun. It's got to be fun. And business can be fun. Business can be hard and business can be serious, but it's also got to be fun.
So a big thank you to Peter for being our solopreneur in the spotlight. We hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you too are a solopreneur and want an online business community of like-minded entrepreneurs to network and synergize with, then visit us at www.solopreneursacademy.com and sign up today for your free account.